Happy Thursday, everybody. Jake Mintz here with Jordan Schusterman. And yes, we are podcasting on an abnormal day for us. We did an episode yesterday on the passing of Willie Mays, but we are indeed in Phoenix, Arizona for the MLB Draft Combine. And we have a whole show revolving around that.
Yes. So we are going to have a conversation with J.J. Weatherholt, one of the top prospects in the 2024 draft, as well as one other topic about minor league baseball. All that and more on this Thursday edition of Baseball Barbercast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbercast, the only baseball podcast in the world that knows that Chase Field is whatever field Javi Baez is at. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And that's what we call a stray.
Chase rate field for Javi Baez. Yes, we are still in Phoenix, Arizona. And our plans, of course, changed a little bit yesterday after the tragic news of the passing of Hall of Famer Willie Mays. We recorded a brief episode about Willie Mays that went up on Wednesday. We wanted to make sure we kind of cleared the docket and had a little conversation about that. But we did record a good chunk of episode, a chunk of an episode before that that we wanted to still share with the people. So we are here on a Thursday. We are recording this on Wednesday wearing different clothes than we were when we recorded it yesterday. So if you're watching on YouTube, you might see a couple interesting edits in here. But we thought that the conversation we had with J.J. Weatherholt and about our first takeaways from the Combine were worthy of being shared with the world. So we hope you enjoy this kind of episode. But and then later on, we are going to talk a little bit about the news out of the minor leagues involving the challenge system and automatic ball strike system that may or may not be coming to Major League Baseball in the near future. But yeah, anything else we need to clarify before we send it to our Combine stuff?
Not really. Just, you know, another 13 hours since the news of Willie Mays passing away and the stories continue to roll out about him. And we would encourage people to read those stories, to learn what he meant to people. And, you know, there's a level of, maybe this is too self-centered, like a level of FOMO I've had that I don't have any particular connection to Willie Mays.
Sure.
You know what? I'm going to call my dad because, you know, like my dad who grew up on Long Island and would have been like 11 in 1973 probably remembers Willie Mays being on the Mets.
Yeah, the end. Yeah, that's there you go. Well, there's some a little work for you to do later. Of course, if you're listening to this on a Thursday, of course, we have the game at Rickwood Field happening tonight. We will react to that. We will have another episode coming on Friday, so we will definitely address that. But hopefully you enjoy this little bit of an additional content from us here in Phoenix. So we'll take a quick break, and when we return, we will go back in time a little bit and hear us talking about the Combine and talking to one J.J. Weatherholt.
But let's begin here in Arizona.
Yeah.
And the first thing I need to say is, why do people live here in the summer? It is a fascinating type of heat. Thankfully, we are inside for the MLB Draft Combine. We did a bit of a preview episode on Monday to try and explain to people what this event is and why it is important. Mm-hmm. What has struck you so far in person that was maybe different than what you expected about the
Combine? Yeah, right. So this is, of course, the first time we've come to this event. And I think, you know, the workouts and the BP sessions were, as soon as we got in here, they're cycling through. And so it's a little bit overwhelming. Of course, we're doing interviews all day, and so we're not necessarily down there watching every single swing. But it is a reminder of just how many guys they're kind of cramming into this event, and not necessarily in a bad way, but to get this many players from all over the place, from all different parts of the country, it's really interesting to see these batting practice groups, right? You know, normally you go to a game, okay, there's this group is the you know, these top hitters and these guys, but they're all on the same team, and they're all, you know, roughly. I mean, here we had one with a first baseman from LSU and a high school shortstop from Nevada, and then it's a really interesting mix of players. And
what a tapestry.
Yeah, it really is, and that's something that in some cases you almost feel bad for some of the high schoolers that have to take BP right after some of the college guys. There were some interesting juxtapositions for that earlier today. But long week ahead, you know, they got strength and conditioning stuff starting on Thursday. I'm really interested to see what those drills look like in person. But obviously a lot of BP today. We got the high school game coming up tonight. Maybe we'll talk about that later this week. But it's been cool. It's been cool to see just this many amateur players that I've been reading about and kind of seeing video of and seeing them in person is really
and
cool.
It is funny to watch you operate in this space because, you know, some people listening know this about Jordan. Maybe some people don't. If Jordan woke up tomorrow and said, I only want to do amateur baseball coverage,
That'd be bad news for Jake.
It would really be rough for me. However, you could do it. You could make a living and a career doing this. You are so plugged into it. It's really fun to watch. And so to see you operating in this element is very interesting. The other thing that I've gathered that has surprised me is kind of how few team people are watching what is happening on the field.
Yep.
And that is bizarre. Because you would imagine that what is a showcase? What is any scouting opportunity? It is an opportunity to evaluate a player by looking at them. However, that is really not what the combine is.
Yeah.
It's not. Yeah. And it is, I think, billed as that by MLB to the public. Maybe we build that to people.
And you got to put something on TV. And if you want to put something on TV, you can't just put a video of a closed door with the team logo, because that's what's important, right? We talked about that with Nate Tice. That, and by the way, as we talked to team personnel this week, it's like, yeah, you know, we did whatever, 6 or 7 interviews today. Teams are doing 25. You know, they are cycling through as many players as they can. That is the important stuff, the medical stuff as well. I am really curious about Thursday when, you know, the field becomes looks more like it's just drills, not batting practice. Because the reality is, a lot of the scouts have seen a lot of these players take batting practice before.
But that, again, that's why these players are here.
Sure.
They didn't pick 300 names out of a hat from applicants.
That's true. That's true. We did pick them because they are the best players in this draft class.
And the reason we know that they are the best players in this draft class is in large part because teams have been evaluating these players for months and months and months.
Right.
And so to go onto the field and watch somebody like Jared Jones, who is the first baseman at LSU that you mentioned, to watch him take batting practice is not necessary for a team to evaluate Jared Jones when they draft him.
Yes. However, I will say that while this is something that you do see even in big league ballparks, certainly in big league ballparks now during batting practice, there is something cool, and we're so used to it now because of all the data that we have. It is kind of amazing when you think about, even like I think about 10 years ago when we started going to games or going to minor league games and watching batting practice and what that means. And you really have to pay attention to really know, oh, that guy's, you know, hitting it hard, or this guy's hitting it far. Now you don't really, because I just get to look up on that big screen and it says Jared Jones just hit one 113 miles an hour. And yeah, I saw where the ball landed. Now I know exactly how far it went. And that's cool. Like that's, I bet that's cool for the kids, right? The kids, a lot of the high school kids who haven't necessarily not just had a batting practice session in a big league ballpark, which is of course a good opportunity, but to have that immediate feedback and know, oh yeah, I got that one. That's undeniably fun. And there is, I think, some value to that to be able to see that instant feedback. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. And the real purpose is the interviews.
Yeah.
And we are, in a weird way, part of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Car wash.
Yeah.
Because every player here has a schedule that they're given by MLB. There are really two main categories of people, of players that are here, right? There are the guys who are doing on field and the guys who are not. We are mostly speaking with guys who are not doing on field stuff.
Sure.
That is because we prefer, for the purpose of this, to speak with the players at the very top of the draft.
Sure.
The players at the top of the draft are there for a reason, and therefore they have less of an incentive to do performance-based activities because it can only hurt them, mostly. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, they're just doing
talking. They're here
talking.
To chat. Yeah.
They're here to kick it.
Yeah.
And when we would ask a player, J.J. Weatherholt, who you'll hear from in a sec, what's your day look like? A lot of these players have said, oh, well, we're talking to you guys, and then we're talking to The Athletic, and then we're talking to, like,
I don't know, Athletics.
The Athletics, you know, and then the Mets, and then whatever.
Yeah.
We are kind of within that car wash, which is both funny and very odd.
Yeah, it is funny that it's just kind of part of their schedule, and from their perspective, and I guess we could talk to some of the players about this. And I'm looking forward to, you know, comparing notes with some of the team personnel that we know or other media friends that we have in terms of who they talk to and what they got to know them. But it is funny because not only is it different between what the Reds people are asking you and what the Dodgers people are asking you, but if you have to talk to Jake and Jordan between the Reds and the Dodgers, that's probably a weird experience. Now, again, maybe
you're tickling two different sides of your brain.
That's the thing. And maybe it's probably less boring and less repetitive, but you also probably kind of got to be ready to go because, you know, who knows what's being asked.
I'm exhausted listening to myself talk. So I can only imagine what it's like to sit across from me.
Yeah, it's a lot. But it seems like the players – And of course, we've caught a lot of them in the early stages of this. And I'm curious, when we talk to a bunch more tomorrow, how worn down some of them are. But a lot of them have had really positive attitudes about it. And I think that that's obviously cool.
Right.
They understand the process, and they understand that, that is why you come here, is to make that good impression in the room. And I'm sure a lot of them are doing that.
Well, and I think, you know, the reason we're here is because we want to help grow this thread, this throughway of the sport we really like. We really like baseball. We like it from the beginning of it to the end of it. From Little League World Series to Adam Wainwright getting crushed to a 7.35 ERA, right?
Yeah,
the whole lifespan.
Yeah, right.
And helping the public understand these people as people and not just as players from age 17 to 23 when they're making their way to the major leagues is really important to us. And we think that we are skilled at that. And we hope that in all the interviews we do this week, that comes through.
Sure. And also, again, that's the thing is, and why do I care about this, is just building. We talk about story. We want to tell stories. And the more information you get and that more history you can build with these players, the earlier you can, the better, right? It's not about from the standpoint of like, aha, I knew about this guy before you. It's just that when they are something, okay, now it means this because of that, because I know this, as opposed to someone just appearing in my baseball understanding. And it's like, now I got to work backwards. Like I say, oh, wait, how did I miss this? I don't like that feeling. So I try and get, you know, build that, you know, history a little bit earlier. But anyway, so the point is, it's been a very interesting day. We'll have another day tomorrow. Wednesday will be very similar. I don't think they'll be broadcasting on MLB Network, but it'll be a lot of similar events, you know, with the BP and with some bullpen sessions. And then Thursday we'll have some strength and conditioning stuff. We'll see some of that before we fly out of here. But it's been very cool. Any other combine thoughts before we get to our JJ conversation?
No.
No.
Okay. No.
We'll have more. We'll recap our full experience on Friday's episode. But if I was listening to this, I would say, hey guys, shut up. I want to hear JJ Weatherholt. And honestly, when I listen back to our podcast, which I do sometimes, I want to listen to JJ Weatherholt again. So I'm going to stop talking. But anything else before we set up JJ?
Well, yeah, I want to set it up for people, right?
Sure.
So who is JJ Weatherholt? First of all, what a name. So he is an infielder from West Virginia University in Morgantown, West Virginia. Mm-hmm. I would say entered the year as the number one prospect in the game, as the number one draft ranked guy.
He was consensus top three. You know, no one had him really lower than that.
Left-handed middle infielder, maybe short, maybe second. Beautiful swing, nice leg kick.
Yeah, won the batting title in Division I last year. Just unbelievable. He's always, always, always hit. But what happened was he had a hamstring injury in the middle of the season. And so he missed about a month of time. And while the other top players in the college class, which I've written about, there's eight very elite college players that are kind of vying for that number one pick, a couple high schoolers, but really those eight, JJ was hurt. And everyone else is putting up wild statistics. And so now we got all these other guys getting in the mix with the number one pick. And JJ wasn't playing. Now, he did come back and he did start to play. He played some shortstop. He did play well down the stretch. But in some ways, it makes sense that JJ Weatherholt is the one here because he had some time to make up for. He had missed that. And so if there is someone, if this is a push to kind of get back into that mix for the top pick, obviously only Cleveland is the one making that decision. But still, it does make sense in some ways that he's the one here. And obviously, after our conversation, you say, he's kind of built for this, right?
A delightful gem.
He works well in this setting. So I think that'll come across and hopefully everyone enjoys. And anyone picking in the top 10 listening to this is like, man, it'd be really cool if he was on my team. I don't think he's getting past probably not even pick 10. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with JJ. But I'll stop rambling. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, you will hear our conversation with JJ Weatherholt. Welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. We are now very excited to be joined by one, JJ Weatherholt. JJ, thank you for joining us. I know you got a long day ahead of you talking to a lot of baseball teams, other dorks like us. We appreciate the time. Welcome to Phoenix. You are at the MLB Draft Combine. Are you tired yet? The day has just begun.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. And the answer is yes, because I'm on Eastern time, so I was up at like 6 a.m. So, yeah, I got a cup of coffee in me, though. An empanada. Still don't know what that is, but I had one.
Wow.
Too, actually.
What a way to start the day.
Well, I'm bored you. I hope that we can be your cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we can get your day started.
Yeah. I mean, I had a little cup of coffee, but two could never hurt.
Okay. Two could never hurt.
That's
so
good.
You are a shortstop from West Virginia University, and we are going to start by asking you about your first name, JJ.
Yeah.
So we did a little digging.
And hard research. Really, really went into it.
The first J, I understand. Your given name is?
Jonathan.
Middle name?
David.
And last name?
Weatherholt.
So the question is obvious. Where's the second J coming from?
My grandma, she just placed it there. No, she called me John John growing up. Jonathan. And when I moved from Baltimore to Pittsburgh, showed up to youth football camp, and the coach, hey, what's his name? To my dad. My dad's like, oh, Jonathan, but we call him John John. He said, I'm not calling him that. We'll go JJ. And JJ stuck.
So youth football coach is why you are JJ Weatherholt. Congratulations to him. And then how long did you play football?
All the way up until like middle school.
Okay.
So I was a pretty solid youth football player, honestly. You could call me a phenom.
Congrats, dude.
Thank you.
I guess I will call you a phenom. I have a
crazy highlight tape, for real.
Ooh. Okay.
What? But here you are at the MLB draft combine.
Yeah, we're on combine.
That's accurate.
Is that, so do you, I mean, you miss it?
I mean, I envisioned some of the days. I was watching Friday Night Lights on the plane right here, and I was like, dang, these games are hype. It could have been me in high school.
Could have been you.
It turned out okay. So
you miss
not
being
mad.
An issue in the open field. You probably don't miss the way your body feels.
That's for sure.
The morning after.
I got lit up, and I was like, I was tough guy until I got hit. Like, and I got hit hard. Fool. I was down. Mom was running onto the field, screaming. And I was like, yeah, maybe this ain't for me.
Okay. I understand. I was the fifth best wide receiver on JV my freshman year. And that was it. And I quit.
You could have been the sixth best, but you were the fifth.
Yeah. Because I was a grinder.
Yeah.
Better believe it.
But I would not refer to Jake as a phenom. But you mentioned through middle school, high school, you get to high school, Mars Area High School, your baseball is the focus. And listen, we're going to talk about your baseballing, but we got to talk about this name, Mars Area High School, the Fightin' Planets. Yep. You go through some of your social media, you are very proud to be a Fightin' Planet. There's a caption in there somewhere, Planet for Life.
Yes.
And I can understand that because most of the kids here were Wildcats and Bulldogs and Tigers and boring, you know, mascots like that. What an experience. What was it like to be a Fightin' Planet?
It's awesome. I'm a planet for life. It's real. Growing up, you tell people, hey, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Mars. They're like, oh, okay, get out of here. Like, what are you talking about? I'm like, no, like, I'm from Mars. And I had a kid on the team who asked me that. I said, I'm from Mars, bro. He said, no way. He's like, dude, the only reason I know it's a real place is because I met a girl who went to Pitt, and she was like, I'm from Mars, too. I was like, yeah, no, it's a real spot. But it's a great town, dude. It's a beautiful suburb north of Pittsburgh. Really good people there, and they care about their sports. Like, it's diehard over there, and we've produced some pretty solid players, too.
Yeah, so both of the Bednar brothers, David Bednar, Pittsburgh Pirates closer, went there. I'm really curious about just the moniker Planets.
Yeah.
So when you walk around Mars Area High School, is there an abnormal amount of solar system related imagery?
There's a good bit. Like, it's not over the top, but it's kind of similar to, like, what you would expect.
Do you have a mask? Like, is there a
there's
mascot?
No, there's like
no one's dressed
actually.
Up as
no,
a,
there's
as
not.
A uh-uh. Whatever a fighting planet is.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that is, but there
because
is
like a big red. It's just like a big red circle.
Well, I was gonna say the hats are amazing.
Yeah,
like, I need to get me some Mars merch
because
those
that,
are probably. Again. There's so many. Well, yeah, most of the high schools are the same.
Here's the best part is. Like me growing up in our conference, it was the Moon Tigers. So
yeah,
Mars versus Moon.
But they're the Tigers. They completely could have gone thematic and they were like, nah, we'll be the Tigers like
right?
every other high school. And you were like, no, we are
leaving. We went for it.
You went for it, which I love. Now, besides Mars, do you have a favorite planet or a least favorite planet?
Yeah, any planet thoughts?
No.
You've been Mars.
Okay.
You've been so focused on Mars.
It's Mars above everything else.
Oh, Mars above all.
Mars over everything. Mars over everything.
So. Well, dude, like how, you know, we have an eight, like Jordan and I are 28, right? And you're 21?
Yeah.
Where were you when planet Pluto got cut?
Got the axe.
Like, do you remember that?
I was too locked in on Mars, man. You know, for real. I don't know. But I do remember that growing up. I don't know exactly.
That's brutal.
You were thank goodness I don't live in Pluto.
Yeah.
Because that would
have
been tough. You could have been the dwarf star. If you were the Pluto fighting planets, you would have had to, you know, maybe change the name.
Hey, I saw the headlines. It was like Pluto is cut. And I was like, oh, it's not Mars. So Mars is good.
Well, and in that moment, JJ said to himself, I will never let this happen to Mars.
No, like, it just can't happen. I'll be a Mars activist.
Yeah, I will not be cut. We will not be cut.
Mars is safe. So the other thing we noticed when we were kind of looking into how you kind of got to where you are is your older brother.
Yeah.
Older brother, Brandon, you've kind of talked about how he's someone that, of course, you looked up to. He was a baseball player. He went on to play D2 at Gannon University. And we heard this nugget that he was the reason you ended up hitting left-handed.
Yeah.
So can you explain that? And that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but why did that make sense for you?
You guys did some digging, huh?
That's awesome. Job.
I hope we're
I'm impressed, man. No, thank you for talking about my brother, because like you said, man, he's the man. So when I grew up, I think I was like 4 or 5, whatever the age is when you start to kind of process like what this little bat is and you start trying to swing with it. And I started swinging like righty. Like my dad's training me, I'm going righty. And then see my brother hit lefty and I just wanted to be like my brother. And so I just started hitting like my brother. And
young?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's how it first started. Because like, I mean, I throw righty, I golf righty, I do it with kick righty. So I do like pretty much everything righty. And then it's just I saw my brother hitting lefty and I wanted to be like him.
Were you still taking any swings righty as you were taking swings lefty? Like, was there a moment where you were switch hitting in Little League games?
No, and I'm not sure why, but...
there's still time.
Yeah, I know. Well, so funny enough, like, I kind of went back to that, and I started to hit righty just to kind of, like, loosen up my back because there's, like, a lot of load on one side. And, well, sure enough, we find out, like, my exit velocity is higher right-handed, like, off the tee. And this is in high school. And I'm like, what is going on here? And so I just move like quicker that way, whatever it is.
Because you're naturally right-handed,
as far as you know.
Yeah, it's not that surprising.
I experimented it with a little, but it ended up like just being too much load for some reason. Like I hurt my back doing it. At the beginning, it made me feel good because I was loosening it up, but then it just became too much, and I was like, all right, I got a can.
That's like I'll never forget, Jordan, when we saw Yu Darvish throwing a bullpen lefty.
Really?
Full flat ground. He's throwing a full flat ground lefty, and it was like, just so that he could feel the balance on his body.
Well, and I just think about that. There are some stories similar to yours, although the origin is a little bit different. But I just think about it as a normal person who plays catch. Like, normal people who try to do things with their opposite, it doesn't work.
It's not good.
Like, it doesn't work. Although for you, like, when you how bad does it look when you try to throw left-handed?
It should not be seen.
Okay.
Okay. That's bad. Well, that's for the best, which is actually a good transition to the next question here, which is that another thing you find when you kind of look back to what you were posting about earlier in your career is that it seems like you enjoyed pitching. Now, clearly that did not extend into your college career at West Virginia, but two-way playing is, you know, two-way players are all the rage, not just because of Ohtani, but we see it at the college level too. Is there a part of you that you know, misses pitching? And I know you had some success on the mound in high school.
Man, if you were ever at practice at school, like, every day, coach, I'm feeling good today. Let me get on the mound. Nope. Like, hey, let me get on. Nope. I had to deal with our pitching coach. I forget what it was. I think it was like if I got 2 or 3 hits in a game. I was like, bro, if I get 2 or 3 hits in a game, you have to let me throw at least one pitch on the track, man, fully warmed up. And if it's above 90, I have to throw another. He's like, deal. Never happened.
Which is so funny. Normally, it's the opposite, right? Normally, the pitchers are trying to perform to let them hit. Right.
Oh, we like throw. If you throw a shutout, we get pitcher BP.
Right. You were like, hey, if I rake today, Get me on the mound.
Yeah, it's what I did. I closed in high school, and I forget what my stat line was, but it was some stupid, like, 6 innings.
5 innings, 14 Ks.
Yeah. So you knew it. Yeah, it was like, I remember at one point there was like one dude who got a hit, and then there was one other dude who put a ball in play, and everybody else was just like, strikeout.
Were you still, you know, talking smack in Morgantown, saying like, oh, I could get you guys
well,
out here?
So here's the thing is, like, people just wouldn't believe me. Like, I'm like, yo, I'm telling you, I could go on the mound and hit like 90 plus right now. And they're like, get out of here, bro. I'm like, dude, I'm serious. Like, I could do it. They're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, dude, senior high school, I was like 88, 92. Like, I promise you, my arm's gotten stronger. Like, I could do it. And they're just like, nah.
I can't imagine being on the Mountaineer baseball team and like doubting that.
Right.
Oh, yeah. You know, JJ, no, what a bum. Like, he can't.
I don't believe it.
Right? Yeah, I know. I swear I could do it.
Yeah, but it seems like they were not open to letting you
know. No, I think coach had like the best interest in for me. Like, I think he's just concerned about the odds that I do throw one pitch hard and there goes the elbow.
Let me tell you, not worth it.
Yeah, not worth it.
Not worth it.
But the upside of hitting like 90 plus, maybe lots of spin on it, some IVB, like,
he knows the stuff. He's thinking here at the combine, he's like, all right, maybe I'm not going to swing, but can I get on the hill? Like,
for real?
Let me show you what I got. Yeah. Now, to that point, though, you know, it seems like future on the mound, unlikely.
Yeah.
But part of your journey, you know, as a player has been kind of moving around the infield particularly. And this year, you really got the most exposure at shortstop. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, that's a position that, of course, in this setting, every scout wants to know, can this guy play shortstop?
Right.
And even in high school, were you playing shortstop in high school? Because, you know, a lot of the sites maybe list you as a second baseman. You were playing some second, some third. What is your history with that position? And why do you believe, you mentioned the arm, why do you believe you can be a shortstop the next
level? Yeah, no, so I originally started playing second. I mean, I played second growing up my whole life. I was kind of always like the undersized, like fast kid. And then right. I kind of got some more tools. But the travel team that I had played on, my best friend had played shortstop. Me and him were up the middle since we were 10 years old.
Who was your? Who was this? Who was
his name? Is Tyler Cachado.
Okay.
Call him Buggy. But
so he, Buggy's playing short.
Yeah, Buggy's playing
you're,
short.
You're you know you're getting and attention, but it's like no, he's the second baseman.
Well, my friend's playing short. Where it's like okay, so. I have the tools to play short, but Buggy's so good at short and I'm so good at second. Like, why would we mess with it? Like, we were, and I'm telling you, we were like the best duo up the middle at every single tournament we went to. I'm being serious. Like,
and this is travel ball and high school?
Where's travel ball?
He's still playing?
Ball, yeah. Yeah, he is. He was at a JUCO and then he was going to Aiken University, mm-hmm. to Division II. Nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he was something else, like bare hand and stuff, like just ridiculous at the age. And he was just always so good. And it was right. like, yeah, I could do it, but. We don't need to mess it up.
Right.
But then I get to high school, and I think I played 2 or 3 games of second, and then our shortstop got hurt or something happened, mm-hmm. whatever. I played shortstop towards the end of my freshman year, and then I played short for the rest of that.
So. And so then you get to West Virginia, and your first couple years there, you're playing mostly second base.
Played
right?
third freshman year.
But then even in summer ball, it seems like you were mostly second and
yeah.
third.
Yeah, it was like second and third. I played left field in summer ball.
Right.
It was like yeah. people just wanted me to hit, so it was like they'd throw me anywhere. Right. But most of those teams have like a shortstop that they bring in to play
right.
short.
So then this year, it kind of opens up a little right. bit. And then how is that, you know, transition to kind of getting back? Was it comfortable? It's like, all right, it's like riding a bike. I obviously got used to it. But, you know, playing shortstop at the Division I level against
–
it's a lot harder than
for
playing
sure.
it respectfully in the when, you know, when you're playing against yeah. Moon or you're playing against, you know, North Allegheny, right?
Yeah.
It's a little bit different. So what was that, you know, experience learning how to play shortstop at one of the highest, you know, collegiate levels?
It was a ton of fun for me personally. I mean, like I was super excited, just trying so hard, like coming up with fielding routines, just paying way more attention to it. And I was ready to go, you know, like super excited to show people what I have. And then of course the leg injury happens and
sure,
then it's
yeah.
like, all right, now I got to relearn how to walk and then
yeah.
run and then hit. And
yeah.
now I got to relearn how to play the field again. And it's
mm-hmm.
like, I don't have range right now. So it was tough, but it was still a ton of fun. And like you said, like I believe I can play shortstop just
right.
based off of the tool set that I have. It'll take work, but I'm not concerned about that. It's all work, you know, so.
What did you change about your pregame prep? Like, about your drill set
I
in
got
order
one.
To be, you got one.
Yes.
you made a plan.
I was always good enough to play second,
right.
like
Show
sleeping.
Up.
Like, literally
yeah.
just go out there and just yep. rely on the hands. And our infield coach from school actually went to Oklahoma State last year. He was my guy, and you know, I talked to him. Right, kind of when he was leaving, told us that he was leaving. I was like, yo, man, like, what do I got to do? And he's giving me the rundown. Like, you got to do this, before you go take swings. Every day you got to do grounders, this. And then we get an infield coach from Air Force. Unbelievable dude, great guy. And just working with him was fantastic for me. So it was like, yeah, when I get out here, first thing I want to do is go hit, right? Like, we have open field or whatever. When we have, like, student managers, bless them. They're amazing. Like, flipping to us because the coaches can't be there. And it was before that, let me go take some GBs.
Right.
And so that was kind of it.
Right, because you trust the bat. Like, obviously,
sure.
that takes maintenance all season long.
Right.
But for you, the area where you could improve more was defensively.
For sure.
Right,
yeah.
So just being more intentional with that yep. work pregame probably really helped.
And it feels like, you know, you've proven so much offensively that now, you know, you had that play during the postseason that everyone's
yeah.
freaking out about. It's like, oh, my God, wow, Weatherhill can do that. I imagine that is where you feel like you are proving people.
For sure.
You know, not necessarily wrong, but, like, that's where the fun is. Because no one's coming out here and be like, I don't know if JJ can hit.
Right.
But there are people saying, I don't know if JJ can play shortstop. So that, I have to imagine, that's really a driving factor for
nah,
you.
Nah, it was awesome. I mean, I remember making that play. And now it was a great play. But
yeah.
I remember seeing people like, I didn't know he could do that. And I was like, dang, I knew I could do that. Like, what,
right.
where you been?
What a backhanded compliment.
Yeah, right?
Yeah,
like,
right.
I was like, what do you mean I can't do that? Why can't I do that? Like,
yeah.
So, no, it was a great play. Like, it was super cool. But that's just one of those areas where it's like people kind of could tap in and be like, oh, you know, he can play there a little bit. So that was cool.
One question I want to ask you, you know, I was watching an interview back you did, and you talked about your Korean heritage and
mm-hmm.
the Korean influence and kind of how that style of baseball has impacted your career.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Like, were you just watching a lot of Korean hitters as a kid, watching other Asian leagues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so honestly tapped in mostly to like Japanese baseball. Yeah. I got a huge experience playing with USA last mm-hmm. year, obviously. But growing up, my dad, huge Ichiro fan. So he's the one who's Korean. He's half Korean. So kind of his childhood, obviously he wanted to find players that he could associate more with.
Right.
And so Ichiro was a big one of his. Loved him. And so, I mean, you can just tell like the way they play is just different. Like
right.
Ichiro, the way he hits is different. They all have like similar swings when you notice that. And a lot of the principles they teach over there, it's man, they're trying to breed some ball players. Like you're growing up going to like academy of baseball.
Oh, yeah.
And so I had always paid attention like from a distance. Mm-hmm. And then last year in the summer when I got to play against Chinese Taipei and Team Japan, mm-hmm. I really got to see it firsthand. And it was so cool. Like some of the drills they were doing, the swings. I mean, dudes were moving their feet as they were swinging. Like it was unbelievable. I mean, I remember this one kid, great hitter. He was a left-handed bat. Bro got a cutter that was about to hit him. And he like jumped out of the way and fouled it off. And I was like, what is going on? And they get to two strikes. I'm telling you, they would just stay so inside the ball. Yeah. They would chase stuff in the dirt and hit like little dribblers and beat them out. It was unbelievable.
But what's amazing about it too, and this is related to your swing, is the bat control and the leg kick at the same time. Your leg kick, is it related to that? How did that come about?
I just grew up doing it. And it was something, I worked with some hitting coaches called the Fennel Brothers. I had worked with them since I was like 10 back in my area. Shout out to my dad for finding them.
Shouts out to your dad.
Mike. Yeah.
Shouts out Mike.
Mike, thank you, Mike.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. And, big Mike.
Yeah, and anyway, they had a brother, Mick Fennel, and he played pro ball out of a Division II school, which was unbelievable. And that's how he hit. He kind of had like a leg kick. And so I just working with him and them, kind of modeled my swing a little bit after him. And then I got to college freshman year, kind of got nervous that like, oh, this leg kick might be too much. You know, you start getting those doubt thoughts like, oh, am I even good enough to be here? Blah, 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 blah. So I kind of got rid of it, proved that I could play freshman year. And I was like, all right, like I could play, but like I really am trying to play. Like I'm trying to be me. And so I went to summer league and I was like, screw it, I'm going back to my roots. And I started leg kicking and just started raking again. So.
Wow. And it worked. So my last question for you as we spin this forward. Obviously, you're here at the Draft Combine looking forward to a professional career. What are you most excited about? What are you most excited about getting to pro ball? Whoever ends up drafting you, what are you most looking forward to about being a professional ball player and then, you know, hopefully one day a big leaguer?
Yeah, I think it's honestly the developmental side. I mean, at West Virginia, they did a fantastic job like making me the player that I am today. But, you know, you get to pro ball and there's just new resources. I mean, you have the top of the line technology, you have top of the line teachers, like people who that is their life is to break down swings.
Yeah.
Luckily enough, like I said, at West Virginia, we had guys that did that, but I mean, their job is also, they have to be across the country recruiting, you know? Yeah. So it's like, they got six jobs where it's like these big league coaches or even minor league coaches are designated one person to each job. So it's like, it'll be sweet kind of just having those resources and just being around people who are such elite level athletes and their mindsets, just learning, man. I'm most excited to learn and just grow my game.
Well, and then it becomes your job.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to worry about going to class and you don't have to worry about like,
funny enough about that, I come home and I always get super excited when I come home because I get to golf with my buddies and fish with my buddies. I'm like, all right, what's everybody doing? And they're like, I'm at work. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, you work? They're like, bro,
we're real adults.
We're like juniors in college.
Yeah, we didn't hit 400.
We all have internships.
So like, what are the summer jobs? Well, yeah, what are some of your buddies' summer jobs?
Like financial stuff.
Okay.
Two of my buddies are in New York City working for financial companies. And then
we've sort of experienced this. We're very fortunate enough to work in baseball. You can say, yeah, I cover baseball. A lot of people, it's like, oh, what do you do? And then they try to explain, like, yeah, I don't know what they do.
I don't know what any of my friends do.
I don't know. He's in New York doing
something. They're all, just say consultant. They're all consultants.
They're consultants. Yep. They do work. Yeah. That's what they do.
They do that work.
They do work and they can't golf with me from 9 to 5.
Well, I hope, JJ, I hope you can find some people to golf with you. Obviously, you will also be having other things to do after the draft, after you sign. Thank you so much for joining us. This was an absolute delight. JJ Weatherholt, the second J, I guess, stands for another John, but that's up to you. We'll, I guess, start calling him John. JJ, thank you so much for joining us. This was a blast, man.
Thank you, guys. It was fun.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Something that myself, JJ Weatherholt, and AAA all have in common is abs.
Really? What does that mean? Explain to the people what we're about to talk about. Because that's a weird flex to just come out of the break from, you know, the other day, and now you're saying, I got abs.
You got abs, too.
What are you talking about?
Technically, we all have abs.
It is true, right? We all have them, but it's...
Do you really have them?
What are we talking about? What are the abs you're referring to in what we are about to discuss?
Thank you all so much for listening to the pod. No, yeah. I would say ABS stands for automatic ball strike.
Yeah, automatic, automated. You get the gist.
Animatronic.
It's definitely not that. There was some news out of the old big baseball.
Big ball.
Earlier this week that AAA will soon be transitioning to a full challenge system only as opposed to the full ABS, ABS, that they have been experimenting with over the past few years.
People might know this better as robo-umps.
Robo-umps, yes.
Now, when we talk about robo-umps, and it makes me think, right, of iRobot and the end of civilization.
Yep.
But what robo-umps really means is just a catch-all term for technological assistance in calling the strike zone.
Yes.
More than anything else is what I think, right? It's not like using tech to do safe out at first.
Yeah.
That's not really.
Maybe we'll have that someday. But, yes.
But we're talking about the strike zone. Mm-hmm. Now, there are really two main categories of that. One is having the tech, having the automated ball strike call every single pitch of a game, mm-hmm. right? That is the full robo-ump experience. That is an umpire standing behind home plate as something of a puppet mm-hmm. with an earpiece in their ear mm-hmm. being relayed the balls and strikes instantaneously from the system.
Yep.
That has been in place in AAA mm-hmm. at certain stadiums mm-hmm. for this season. Now, the other side of it is the challenge system. Mm-hmm. Explain the challenge system.
So for half the games, we've had the full automatic ball strike. And the other half, we've had the challenge system, which is that system you're referring to, that electronic strike zone, is constantly operating in the background. However, the umpire is there calling balls and strikes. However, the players have the opportunity to challenge. If they see a pitch that they think that was obviously not a strike, they can pat their head, whether it's the pitcher, whether it's the catcher. It's funny because it's like the managers in the dugout are not necessarily in position to challenge. I guess they could.
But they shouldn't. So this is actually a really mm-hmm. little inside baseball thing. Mm-hmm. Managers, when they get mad, historically about the strike zone, it's changed a bit with so much instantaneous video.
Yep.
Managers are usually mad about up and down, not in and out, mm-hmm. because they cannot see in and out from the angle in the dugout because of the way that they're looking at the strike zone. Up and down is much more intuitive. Mm-hmm. I would doubt that we see any managers challenging balls and strikes from where they're standing, and they will allow the hitters to do that. Now, I do want to talk briefly about the impact here. The tapping of the head.
Yes, yes. And this is something that, particularly for hitters, right? Oh, I think that's outside. I tap my head. And what is so amazing about this is it is very fast, right? We can talk about how much we think this is, how quickly this is going to come to Major League Baseball, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But when we talk about replay entering our sports, all sports, right? But in our case, baseball, it's not, a lot of the frustration isn't necessarily about getting it right or not, although that's clearly an issue when in some cases they go to the long review and then it seems like they still get it wrong, whatever. But it is about slowing the game down, right? However, this does not slow the game down. If you have seen this in action in person in AAA, in the fall league or other things, you've seen it on video, it is very fast and it is very cool. And what it is, okay, I think that was outside. They called it a strike, boom. And they basically, the umpire turns around and initiates the review. Within 5 seconds, it puts it up on the screen in most AAA ballparks, and it shows you exactly. It doesn't just tell you whether it was, you know, the challenge was successful or not. It shows you where the pitch was on the electronic strike zone, and so you can see it.
The best comparison is tennis.
Yep. Yeah.
In the way that mm-hmm. at a tennis match, they have the zoom in on the ball mark.
Yep, whether it was out or not. You can see it of the micro. And that's how it works too, because you have situations where, okay, I think it was up, but we go to the challenge system, we review it, and it barely, sure it looked up, and I think that this other ump wouldn't have called it that. Oh, but it just nicked that electronic zone, and there it is. Sorry, you lose the challenge.
So it is, I guess that is important to understand. It is technically a strike, right, if any portion of the ball crosses any portion of the strike zone. Mm-hmm. For it to be a ball, it's like soccer. Mm-hmm. The whole of the ball must cross the whole of the line.
Right.
Okay?
Well, or for it to be a ball. Outside the box.
For it to be a ball, the whole of the ball has to cross the whole of the line. I'm excited to see the head tap become a commonplace hand motion in our sport. We're so used to the headphones. We're so used to the home run. Mm-hmm. In soccer, they have the box to replay.
Yep.
We are now going to have little kids when they think some kid in high school, this will go viral. Mm. Some kid in high school will have a pitch that they think is a ball. The kid will then tap their helmet and the ump will get mad and eject them.
But that's
I'll give it three years.
You're saying in a park where they can't actually challenge.
Yeah, in like, local park.
But hey, you know what? That's interesting because will that become the universal sign of like disdain for the zone, even if it's not actually initiating a challenge? Because I would argue that if I'm an umpire, that is it's kind of passive aggressive. But it's better than, turning around and start cussing them out. Like just a tap of the head to say, I think you missed that one is kind of like a more peaceful.
Yeah.
But it's very sassy.
Very sassy. And it fits into it's very similar to a hitter drawing the line on the dirt where they thought the ball was.
Which is often an ejection. You get tossed right. That's Julio had a very, Julio Rodriguez had a very famous ejection like that. I don't know if it was his rookie year or last year. Draw on the dirt, saying this was here. The umpire said, "What was that? What was that? That was not very respectful."
I'm pro head tap. That's awesome.
Sure.
And you mentioned this before. Let's talk about, is this a good thing or a bad thing? And it really just gets at the heart of what do we like and not like about replay, right? If you don't like replay, it's not that you dislike the truth. Mm-hmm. It's that you don't like how long it takes for you to get the truth.
And you're really not liking if you are somehow still not getting
waiting
the truth.
Waiting for a lie.
waiting for not getting. Now, again, there are plays that are, I would say 35, 40% of replays when I'm watching a game, I'm like, yeah, that's hard. I don't know. If I was sitting in the replay center, I would have had a tough time, making a call there. But then other times, and then there's like 5% of the time where it's like, how do they not see it? Whatever. The point is this a good thing or a bad thing? And the reason why we wanted to talk about this so urgently is because MLB acting on this in the middle of the season is very, very significant. I think this is a very, very big deal because when we talk about the possibility of any form of an electronic strike zone coming to Major League Baseball, as we've talked to players who play in AAA or have gone down on rehab and all that stuff, everyone has said since this has started, the electronic zone full ABS is bad. It is bad for hitters. It is messy for pitchers. It is maddening for a lot of people involved. It is not a great system.
It fundamentally changes aspects of the game.
In a way that does not feel good and does not feel productive in the way that baseball is trying to. It's not helpful. It's not
right.
helpful.
It would completely change catcher framing. You would see pitchers throwing curveballs at the top of the strike zone that just nick the top.
Yeah.
It would be a total rethinking of the sport as we know it.
How we are trying to achieve strikes.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's a bad thing. However, having the automatic ball strike system going on in the background and having players, give the players having the opportunity to use the challenge system in certain instances will not alter behavior.
Yes.
It will only help us get the truth more often.
Yeah.
And that, in my opinion, and I believe in your opinion, is an overwhelmingly positive occurrence.
Yes. And what I think about, though, and why, as I mentioned, why it's so important that they are deciding already to say, listen, this full zone, this full ABS is not it. But we do believe in the challenge system, and we need to perfect that, and we need to figure out how that is going to work. And so that is why they are switching to it for all the games moving forward so that they can get more data involving that system at the AAA level so that they can start to understand what are the flaws with this, how are teams maybe the feedback from the teams and the players and the pitchers about maybe there are ways to manipulate the challenge system. And I've had some interesting conversations about players with that and, almost having pitches, purpose pitches to almost bait guys into into challenging because you know where the zone is. Like, there will be some interesting stuff with that as well. However, it does not feel like it is fundamentally changing it as much. And I do think that the last part about this is that why is baseball, why did we put in a pitch clock, right? Baseball wanted to improve the fan experience. Yep. They thought that it was getting too slow and too long and too boring, right? And I do believe that a well-executed challenge system will be a not just a positive because we want the calls to get right and we get mad when this one call, this one spot is terrible, and in theory that's a safety net, but because it's fun to watch. It's a cool thing to see players, all right, I think I like that moment is a new element to the game, which is not changing the fabric of the game, but is adding something, I think, fun for the fans, which ultimately that's kind of the point.
This news should be Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, New Year's.
Wherever you get gifts.
You know, Tu B'Shvat. All rolled into one. This should be a day of celebration if you are anti-robo-ops. Because this news is indicating...
It's almost a white flag.
It's a white flag, exactly. Yeah. MLB is saying full robo-umps is not happening at the major league level.
Right. It's not worth our time to continue to try and figure that out.
That is, to me, the biggest takeaway from this.
Yeah.
That's a huge W.
Yep.
Jameis Winston is just eating that W today.
Yep.
And
I would love to know if people think that this, there's another interpretation, but that is my takeaway here, and that is why we wanted to address it. So we'll see. I'm excited to see more challenges. And because, I love watching, seeing it. When I watch AAA games, I've seen them in person. Like, it is a really cool thing, and I think seeing that more, will we have a challenge system in Major League Baseball next season? I very much doubt it, but I think we will see it at some point in the next decade or so, and I think it's going to be really interesting.
That is our podcast. A bunch of other wacko games this week. We are not qualified or prepared right now to tell you about them.
Yeah.
Very quickly, Orioles-Yankees was very spicy on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Judge hit in the hand. He's okay.
Yeah.
Spice level between Orioles and Yankees, only a good thing.
That's fine.
No notes.
That. Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, like, this is something that we've experienced as we've gotten to go to events like this. It happens during All-Star Weekend, too. When we are at a place and we are trying to, you know, ingrain ourselves, it is very disorienting to be as disconnected from the Major League slate as we normally are. Because on an average night, I'm not missing it. It's not that I'm watching every single game, but it's like things don't slip through the cracks. Whereas now when we have a long day here, whatever, like I'm waking up this morning and I'm looking at these box scores. I'm like, oh my God, what happened? What happened here?
And it's more disorienting when you're at a baseball event.
Than if I was and in a different time zone than we're used to.
Yeah, like if I was on vacation.
Sure. You're like, I know I'm disconnected.
Yeah,
that's the point.
Exactly.
Whereas here, I'm watching and thinking about baseball, and yet Major League Baseball stuff is happening, and I'm completely missing it.
The all-time GOAT moment of this was when the Tigers threw a combined no-hitter when we were on the field for BP during the Futures game.
Yes. And this is, I was going to say, this is really the most feeling, and we'll have this again next month, is when we get to All-Star on Thursday or Friday before that weekend, boy, do we not watch baseball. When Ellie stole all three bases in Milwaukee, that was also last year during the Futures game, stuff like that. Anyway, the point is, I'm sure there's stuff happening on the field, other news that we will hit. We will have an episode on Friday, but we hope you appreciated this extra edition of Baseball Barbercast. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for making this possible from a distance. Thank you again to Sid and Ismail here in Phoenix. They have been fantastic for us. And we'll have more Combine recap. We'll have the Rick Woodfield recap coming on Friday. But until then, thank you all for listening. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Thank you to JJ Weatherholt for joining us earlier. And we will talk to you all again later this week.